the underwriters. Pika Moose Restaurant on State Route 28 in Big Indian, with farm-to-table cuisine Thursday through Monday. Indoor dining from 4 to 9 p.m. and outdoor dining on the moonlit deck. Take out till 10. PikaMoose.com or 845-254-6500. 845-254-6500. Mountain Flame in Arkville, featuring a range of products for home heating solutions. A variety of fireplaces, wood stoves, and gas and pellet stoves are available and on display. For sales and service, Mountain Flame in Arkville. Warming home since 1980. Details at mountainflame.com. Restless Works, a contemporary architectural interior and graphic design studio specializing in residential, commercial, and hospitality projects. Based in Andes, Restless Works designs new homes, additions and renovations, kitchens, hotels, restaurants, and studio spaces throughout the Catskills, the Hudson Valley, and New York City. More information at 845-676-6190, 845-676-6190, or restlessworks.com. Rockland Cider Works upstate in Gilboa, an agritourism cidery with vacation rentals on a sprawling former dairy farm. Gluten-free hard cider made from 100% New York State apples. New York State produced beer, wine, and spirits. Rockland Cider Works upstate on Stryker Road in Gilboa. RocklandCiderWorks.com.
Hi, this is Alan Reynolds, host of Pure Country, Saturday afternoons from 4 to 6, and the Pure Country Radio Truck Stop Sunday nights from 10 till midnight on WIOX Roxbury. Serving New York's Catskills region at 91.3 FM, WIOXRadio.org, and MCC Cable Channel 20.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and at 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi on smart devices through the Radio FM app, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talking about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good, Ryan. How are you?
All right. What have you been up to?
Christmas. That's about it.
Christmas. My tree's down and is on the pile.
Over with, huh?
It's over, man.
Did it make it through Christmas Day?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's out there.
Mine just went up on Monday, so I guess I got to leave it through the weekend, through New Year's, before I take it down. I wasn't going to do a tree this year.
No.
But then I found one, and it looked good, and I got permission to take it and went home with it.
That's good.
Happened to have the Silky in the truck, and that was it.
That was it.
More improv.
the Christmas tree farm I went to and the one down the road from it were both sold out a week after, a few days after Thanksgiving when we went.
Yeah, that's what I saw all over. There was sellouts of Christmas trees. Mine is just a little Norway spruce, like 4 feet tall.
Yeah.
Small little thing.
It's not bad.
Yeah, looked nice.
Who knows? I may have to get one next year if they're sold out. I don't know. We'll see. But, I don't know. Just been doing some hiking for next year's hunting.
Yeah?
Yeah, trying to find a good spot in the mountains. I don't know. Not happy with anything yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm going to start switching tactics to more tracking if I can. But you never have snow for it. That's the problem. I did it once this year.
Yeah.
There was snow for it one day when I went out. It was fun. I had a lot of fun. I identified a buck track. I followed it.
Mm-hmm.
I found him. Couldn't shoot him. He was running. But, you know, ways to improve.
Yeah.
It was a shooter size. It was a, you know, nice buck. And I would have been happy with. So I want to explore that tactic a little further.
Yeah, snow's tough. You can't really count on it in November.
No.
You know? I don't know. Just got to find that spot that I'm comfortable with that you can get easily in and out quietly. You know? Especially during bow season.
Yeah.
Gun season, I'll go out, but I don't know. It's always hit or miss, you know, in the weather. I mean, it's really got to be perfect conditions as far as I'm concerned. If you're going to walk around, you know, some wet leaves or something to keep you a little quiet.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If it's crunchy, it's so tough.
Yeah. But speaking of deer, I rendered some fat, so that's all done. Had about, I don't know, 7 pounds of deer fat, so it's all done.
And that's a year's worth?
Oh, yeah.
More.
Way more.
Gotcha.
No, that's probably a couple years or more, or several. Yeah. Hmm. Because when you make soap, that's what I make it with, is soap, it expands, so you get more.
Oh, okay.
Than what you think. And it makes a very hard soap, deer fat, and it lasts a long time. It's not as sudsy as like a commercial soap, but I think it's better on my skin. Because when I was staying in Florida using not my soap, it's just, it suds better. It's easier to do, but it's like, I don't know, I feel drier for some reason. It might be because there's alcohol in modern soaps, I think.
Hmm.
Maybe dry out your skin. I don't really know. I don't know the answer to that.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know either, but I feel it. I know what you mean. I've never used deer soap. So.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Like, you know, you can make a scentless soap that doesn't have any fragrance, which is kind of like what you need for hunting.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it took a little while. Just removing the water so it doesn't go rancid, because water is what, I guess, the bacteria attacks, you know? And it makes something that was pretty nasty into something that's pearly white, right? I mean, you made bear fat. You rendered some bear fat recently, right?
Yeah.
It looks pretty when it's done.
Oh, man. And it is. It's gorgeous, and it's so useful, man. So useful.
Yeah.
We got almost 2.5 gallons of oil out of that bear.
Wow.
It just kept coming.
And yeah.
And we used almost, you know, pretty much every ounce that we can get out of it. There was a few bricks of it that we could have got a little more out of that we actually froze, because we wanted to mix that into some of our sausage instead of using pork fat this year.
Yeah.
So we'll use it that way when we make sausage. But
yeah. You learn a lot from the fat of an animal, because the healthier ones are going to have more fat. And you realize that bucks have far less,
yep.
Right? I mean, they're using their energy reserves, and they're chasing does. They're not really thinking about eating as much. The deer with the most fat are going to be matriarchal does, I would imagine. That's what it seems like to me.
Yeah, I butchered a young deer this year, 6-month-old fawn, essentially, and that had almost no fat. It was like a buck.
Right.
It was crazy. Surprisingly.
Yeah.
Because they're so... What if they are eating right away? It's so nutrient rich. And then, you know, they're on grass and browse just like their mothers are by this time of year.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe it's just this one that I did, but no fat.
That matriarchal doe, you've seen it, where they get on their hind legs and they'll kick at other does, kick them out of the area, especially during the spring when they have fawns.
Mm-hmm.
And they claim the best habitat for themselves. Bucks don't really seem to fight, I've seen, for habitat. They're really preoccupied with
Well, you know, they go back up and they hang out together for most of the year. It's kind of like turkeys this time of year. You can look at flocks of turkeys, and all the hens are with each other in one flock, and all the toms are in another flock. And
yeah,
bucks do that in the summer months.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about habitat with bucks, though? Do you think they're as strict as matriarchal does? I haven't seen that, but I don't really know.
That's a good question. I don't think so.
I feel like cover is more important for them.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because even with the does, like, you look at a big field, so you can get eyes on a 20-acre field or bigger, right? You might see a dozen deer out there in an evening, right?
Yeah.
But watch them come out, right? A lot of people don't see them long enough to watch each of these deer come out of the woods. You might have different groups, right? They're usually family groups. So one corner, you might have the first group come out. Then the opposite corner, they come out. Yeah. Then the middle, they come out. And it's all at different times. Eventually, they kind of meld together and are feeding as one. But in the beginning, that's what it is. It's all territory-based. And, you know, some of the best habitat might come out last because they're in some good habitat, feeding on browse on their way there. And where the does maybe that came out 30 minutes before light, they have nothing else to eat, so they're coming right out.
Yeah.
Right?
I feel like a lot of times the younger does come out first, and the older ones will see if they use them as, like, kind of like an experiment.
You first.
That's what I find. I hunt around apple trees and stuff. The young ones just kind of walk around, and then right before dark, the big doe will come out, you know?
Hmm.
Not always. Sometimes they're stupid, too, and they come out and... You know, that's when I usually try to shoot them. But
that old doe, though, she's the smartest one in the woods. There's no doubt. It's harder to kill an old doe than an old buck, it seems.
I think so. I mean, I was watching a video before we came here, and a guy shoots a big buck in Indiana, right? Like, it would be like buck of a lifetime for us.
Mm-hmm.
Buck's on the ground, dead. Made a good shot. Another buck comes in and starts fighting the buck that's dead on the ground. He says he's never seen this before. Not many people ever will see that.
Sure.
He's doing his like, meh, meh, all that stuff, trying to get the buck's attention, trying to get it to go away. He's like, hey, buck, hey, buck, hey, deer. That thing will not even look up because it's just so infatuated with that buck.
Crazy.
And, you know, that's the way they are. But that never will happen with a doe.
No.
Never.
No, you can't fool her.
No. So, anyway, this is the last deer topic of the year, although it is the last show of the year, so it's not saying too much. But we've been talking a lot about deer on From the Forest in the last month or two. So, if you're not about deer, you might not want to hear this. But we're going to talk about deer again, and I promise we'll talk about different things coming up. We got guy from talking about chestnuts coming up here shortly, and moose.
All right.
From Cornell, that's coming up, I think, next month. But we're going to talk about deer once more, and why deer numbers in the Northeast remain low is tonight's topic. This was an article sent to me from the president of the Catskill Forest Association, Mike Porter, and it was an article from the Minnesota Star Tribune, and I think it could be easily related to the higher elevations of the Catskill Mountains in many ways.
Okay. Yeah, I've never been to Minnesota, so.
Me neither. But I feel like what they're talking about is northern Minnesota, you know, kind of like Adirondack-y, mm-hmm. Boreal forest, you know, spruce, fir, used to be paper company land kind of thing.
Okay.
Very mature.
Yeah, Adirondack.
Much more wintry, though, than the Catskills. They get a lot more snow, I would imagine, than we do. Although the higher elevations of the Catskills are, I think, deceiving. They do get snow, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If you're at above 2,000 feet on those days when it might be raining in Margaretville or definitely raining in New Paltz or Kingston, it's snowing hard above 2,000 feet, and it's snowing extremely hard at 2,800 feet and 3,500 feet, right?
Right.
So that's tonight's topic. We have talked about the paradox of low deer numbers in highly protected areas of forest preserve in the past, right?
Yeah.
It's really weird because these areas, like, say, in Wildlife Management Unit 3A, like Slide Mountain Wilderness Area, they are some of the most protected areas in New York State. They're constitutionally protected. They're forest preserved. And they have some of the lowest deer numbers, but yet they're pretty browsed, meaning the forest understory up to 4 or 5 feet is browsed. So it's kind of a weird thing, right? Low deer numbers, yet the browse pressure is still high. Is this widespread throughout the Northeast, maybe in some areas? This hunting season seems like deer numbers were lower, but I don't really know the answer to that. There was a lot going on in Ulster County, where I hunt, as far as episodic hemorrhagic disease, or EHD, however you say that.
Yep. Yeah, we had a show on that a month ago, right?
Yeah.
And we found that Ulster County had the highest reporting rate, so that says anything about deer numbers. I don't know. But I don't know. I do most of my hunting in Delaware County, and they only had one report of EHD, right?
From yeah.
our findings, and I was finding the same thing. But there were some food things going on this year, too. It's hard to point it all in one direction, right? You can't just put your finger on something that broad of a subject and say, well, this is why. You have to look at trends over time. We won't know that for a few more years. Most of these trends are harvest data related, so that number's still coming in. But yeah, there was a spot that almost always, you know, we can go and expect to have an opportunity, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the spots I like to hunt for meat, for does, and never shot one there this year. And that was, of the last 5 years we've hunted it, the only year we haven't.
Didn't see anything either, or you saw what didn't come in within range?
We saw a few. I had a couple opportunities that were failed, but a lot less numbers.
Right.
This spot, it's a lot of agriculture around it. You can typically see, not uncommon to see 10 to 15 deer around you. Not all opportunities, but somewhere around you that many deer in an evening. Saw 3 or 4.
Yep. One. Yeah, I had some more experience.
Yeah, and another spot was nothing. But there was no acorns. And that spot, I guess, maybe is an acorn spot.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they weren't there, but seemed like you couldn't put enough pressure on it. Every time you went in there in years past, there was deer there, and this year, nothing. No sign of deer being there.
I struck out in Gardner, I mean, where I usually always see deer. You got a 75% chance of seeing deer whenever you hunt there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Maybe not within range, bow range, but you'll see them. I mean, I got skunked. And I was like, geez,
wow,
can't believe this. I mean, it's a field, it's got early successional habitat, young forest, you know, some oaks. Like you said, they weren't producing acorns, so they weren't coming over that way. But usually I'll see them in the field at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. I don't know. Pressure might be higher from hunters is another reason why, maybe. I don't know. There might be more hunters out there. I don't know.
There could be. Again, just anecdotally, I ran into somebody in one of my spots this year that I only run into one person ever in my life.
Yeah.
That says a lot.
I mean, in a remote area.
In a remote area, yeah. Not in a pie-plated spot, but ran into one person ever in the past. And there was a family of people. It's crazy. There was a father and a wife and his daughter all hunting this spot. I was like, wow, how did you even... First off, why are you here?
I don't know this person, right?
No, I don't think anybody knows him.
No, all right.
No.
Yeah.
I had just met him. But we were friendly. I exchanged phone numbers with him.
That's cool.
Talked to each other since, but...
I think people are going up in the mountains a little more, maybe. Technology's gotten so good, too.
Oh, there's no reason why you can't.
Yeah, I mean, 10 years ago, yes, there was GPSs, but they weren't as good. They weren't as friendly to use. I mean, they're so much easier now. And then 20 years before that, it was rare to have a GPS.
Now it's
no one went, you know, you had to know how to use a compass and stuff. It's very intimidating. Not that a compass is that hard. You can get basics down pretty easy in the Catskills, but yeah.
Now GPS is even antiquated technology.
Really? What is it now?
It's all on your phone. Your phone is your GPS. And now there's apps.
Oh, you're right.
There's apps that overlay so many maps instantly where, you know, you would have had to download all that beforehand. Now you can just go on your phone and get what you want and see topo lines, photos, old photos. You can overlay anything now.
You're talking to a guy who has neither a cell phone or a GPS.
Just saying. I'm trying to keep you up to speed here.
Some of these guys got them on their watches and stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
I don't know. I still like the compass. It's fun. It's cheap. But there's advantages and there's disadvantages. The disadvantages are you end up looking at the compass more than deer. Another disadvantage is instead of looking at sign, you're paying attention to your map and compass more. The GPS, it seems like, whether it's on your phone or not, you can kind of wander with sign and then, oh, I don't know where I am. Well, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
Then pick back up somewhere on a known spot right away.
Yeah, but there's a way to get around that with a compass. Just, you know, maybe hunt an area where all you got to do is drop back down to a known area, right?
Yep. I do a lot of that.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
I don't know. I've always been paranoid about getting lost because I have been lost in the past, and it's not fun.
No.
And it's not that, you know, I couldn't find my way out, but it just makes for a long day. And
what we just talked about, finding a spot where all you have to do is drop down. I tell you what, if it gets dark and maybe your light's not working properly or whatever, even though all you have to do is go down, it's still an eerie feeling, be it in the dark and not knowing exactly where you're going to pop out. That's tough.
I just love the simplicity of a compass. You know, it just always works.
Right.
You can't really break it. I mean, yeah, if you get a big bubble in it, maybe. But and the most expensive one is like $48, under $50.
Those Suntos, they're the best.
Suntos the way to go. Silver Rangers used to be, but they changed them up. They're made cheaply, and I always had problems with them. I don't know.
I've got a Sunto in my backpack.
Yep, Sunto's good. But what else? Oh, yeah, so tonight's topic is why deer numbers in the Northeast remain low. So we're talking about this article about Minnesota and trying to relate it to the Catskill Mountains. And I guess their deer numbers are dwindling. This is an area that experiences winter and has pretty mature forest, I guess. It's very similar to the Adirondacks and portions of the Catskill Forest Preserve. Large WMUs, that means wildlife management units, or as they call them in Minnesota, I guess, deer permit areas.
Well,
yeah. The North Shore harvest of Minnesota was down about 8% from last year. The largest deer permit area in Minnesota is about 899 square miles. It's pretty big.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Seems giant.
Yeah. Jesus. Is that right? My God. Deer numbers on public land don't recover as fast as on private land. This author was quoting someone from Minnesota DNR. Several mild winters might be needed to increase the northern Minnesota populations and outpace the predators. So, I don't know. I guess their predation up there is mainly wolves.
Oh, yeah. Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, northern Michigan. There's wolves there that we don't have to deal with here, right?
Yeah. So that's a little crazy, right? That's different. So that might be a factor impacting deer in that area that we don't have there. But let's see here. Aging forest, though. Despite the wolves, I guess it's still believed that it's the aging forest. So the forests continue to age there. And how does that reduce deer numbers, right? It's kind of like people don't really think about this. I mean, when we think of deer numbers being reduced, we think mainly of car crashes or collisions and deer hunting, of course, maybe some diseases. I think habitat is probably more impacting on numbers than anything else. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think most people say, well, you know, we're encroaching on them, dwindling habitat. Well, that's not really true. Forest Service data shows that forests are increasing in the Northeast every year by a lot, a high percentage, and it's been happening for a long time. So why aren't deer numbers resembling that? Because they're decreasing
right.
at a steady rate. High percentage for a long time. It's this opposite curve.
And deer hunting's gone down. It's not like we have more hunters.
Right, less hunters every year.
Yeah.
Minus last year.
I think New York State peaked in hunters, from what I remember, in the 1980s.
I think makes sense. A lot of old camps are that era, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. So, John, why would deer numbers go down as forest age, I guess?
Well, that's not the right forest type, right? That's the biggest thing. Deer are an edge-loving species. They need early habitat, early successional habitat. They mainly browse on, November through March, they're eating almost 100% woody browse. And where does woody browse come from? The buds of tree seedlings, right? And if the forest is old and mature, most of those buds are above their heads.
Yeah.
And in a young forest, there's more to reach, more to eat. In the summertime, it matters less because there's other things growing, like forbs and grasses and a lot of food, right? But in the most restrictive time, it is still winter, whether there's snow or not. It's just food-related and habitat-related.
I was thinking about this when I was walking yesterday, but So what you're saying is the aging deep dark forest is maybe not, when it's homogenous like that, it's not the best for deer because it doesn't provide a lot of food. And then if the deer don't have a lot of food, they basically eat everything, which impacts other wildlife that need that food and cover and vegetation growing up to 5 feet. Mm-hmm. You ever wonder why a deer is brown and white and maybe why a black bear or a fisher is black? I was thinking about that.
Well, yeah, true. Maybe a black bear and fisher are more suited for a deep, dark green forest where a deer is obviously edge-loving. They often have that gray coat.
Yeah, Yeah, because I was looking at a deer yesterday walking, and it was in this, obviously there's no leaves on the trees, right? So the sunlight is coming over this mountain and just shining right to the forest floor. You can hardly see the deer. I mean, I missed it. It was probably like 40 yards from me, and I'm looking for deer. And I was like, oh, there's a deer right there. And the way the sun was hitting it, it just, it blended in. That sunlight that filters through like branches and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, that brown and white coloration, it kind of, like, I've known this, but just seeing it again was like really, you know, realizing it, you know? Wow, it does blend into sunlight, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they do.
They really do.
Yeah, when they're out, you ever notice, like, if they're laying out in an open field, even if the field's not green, like this time of year, it's a brown field, and maybe you spot a deer right away across the valley, maybe half a mile away, right? Because their coats are so shiny in that sun with nothing to break them up, right?
Right, yeah.
And so, again, they're not suited for wide-open terrain either.
Right.
It's that middle edge that they blend in so well.
It's like scattered sunshine through a forest canopy, but maybe an open forest canopy.
Hmm.
Makes you wonder, like, maybe those oak savannas that they claim Native Americans burned for, like oak savannas and stuff, it's like the perfect habitat, but I don't know. You know, a little bit of grazing, a little bit of browse. Acorns, nut trees.
Well, look where we have big bucks now, right? So antler growth is not really genetics. It's mostly nutrition, right? Age and nutrition.
Yeah.
Buck needs to be old and have a good diet to grow that big set of antlers. And comparatively, bucks in the Northeast, they don't really have that big of antlers in this region. Big bucks are getting shot out in farm country in Kansas and Nebraska and Illinois, Iowa. Well, what's between all those fields? A lot of edges, right?
Yeah.
And they do. They manage non-productive farmland. Farmers get paid to put it into non-production, and it gets shrubby, and that's the perfect type of habitat, a lot of food for them.
Even in Maine, I was reading an article of a guy who hunts up in the North Woods, and where he shot this big buck was after a logging operation went there, you know, on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
When I was watching the guy in Indiana on YouTube today, and it's like... It's just a perfect deer habitat, I thought. You know, from his tree stand, he's up in an oak tree, just gets done eating a little Debbie.
A little Debbie, very specific.
Yeah. He thinks it brings him luck. Plus, they're delicious. You know, and a big buck pops out, and it's just he's got this oak tree, like a opening that's a tree length and width that lets in a little light for some forbs and grasses and stuff. And then some more, a younger edge, and then you can see mature trees in the background. It's just like it's perfect habitat, you know? Yeah. Nice cover. Buck's chasing the does all around. She's scared as hell. She's trying to get away from, you know, this big animal who has the same senses she does. She can't get away from, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He misses, but he goes to shoot at him and misses, but I don't know. He's so preoccupied, doesn't even stop after seeing this glowing arrow sticking in the ground, but...
Yeah, but that's the habitat they're in, right? They were there for a reason. And
yeah. So all I'm saying is that I think they've gotten used to that kind of open woods condition, and yeah, the habitat matters. So moving back to Minnesota, the DNR there, which is their Department of Natural Resources, says that they have a bucks-only rule, which is very common in big forest areas that have low deer numbers, like the Adirondacks, Catskills Management Unit 3A, which is, again, Slide Mountain. That's our biggest wildlife management unit, I think, in our neck of the woods. Not New York, but...
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a big one in 3A. Maybe. Anyway...
It definitely goes really far, because it comes all the way to the edge of Margaretville.
To my house.
And then goes all the way to your house in central Ulster County.
Right.
So it's a large spread.
And it's the only one that straddles two counties, which is kind of weird. You ever notice that?
No, I never paid attention to that.
Well, it's
but yeah, I see it.
It's 3A, but it's also in Region 4, whatever. But I digress.
Right.
Any case, you can't get a doe tag in that unit. And the deer numbers are still low, despite having a bucks-only harvest. So Minnesota says, yeah, despite this huge wildlife management unit that we manage, deer numbers have plummeted, even though you can't shoot any does. The region's buck harvest has still declined. The biologists do not issue antlerless doe tags. Biologists are out of harvest options. Like, so now what do you do? They do not believe the lack of deer is harvest-related. Other factors, and this was kind of cool. We don't really think about this in the Catskills, but I think it might have some bearing. Logging in that area, not so much in our area. I mean, the Forest Preserve doesn't have any logging. Logging is not focusing, according to Minnesota, on harvesting of smaller trees, aspen down to 45 years old. What they're saying is that they're harvesting conifers in that area, which is taking away their wintering yards, which is thermal cover is extremely important in those wintry areas.
That makes sense. If you're going to have a snowpack that maintains the whole winter underneath those coniferous stands, there's always less snow because those conifers catch some of it on the way down.
Yeah.
Some of it can evaporate or melt off in the canopy setting before it even hits the forest floor.
Yeah, we don't think about that in the Catskills, but hey, sometimes we do get 2 feet of snow, and deer are greatly impacted by that. Now, you might be saying, well, hey, aren't you guys just talking about deer browse being a bad thing? So what if a few deer die? Well, a better way, I think, would be to improve the habitat. But if you are managing for deer, it probably wouldn't hurt, and for other mammals, to retain some hemlock, some Norway spruce, you know? They do use those areas in the summer when it's cooler, and in the winter, it seems like the most. Yeah, like you said, once you get over 8 to 12 inches, I would say, in snow.
Yeah, bird species, too. I know ruffed grouse will seek coniferous cover, too.
Yeah, did they mention that at all in that Audubon training you're taking?
I haven't gotten that there yet. They're mainly talking about species in steady decline, like all of these migratory birds, American woodcock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So this could be negatively impacting deer numbers, not retaining enough conifers or evergreen trees for thermal cover. They do have moose management plans in that area that call for deer reduction, but I guess moose and deer compete for food, right? If you got moose, that's going to plummet numbers for deer, I would imagine, because they browse so much.
Mm-hmm.
What's the moose browse line? I have no idea.
It's way higher than you think, higher than the moose.
Oh, yeah.
When I was in Maine this year, it was amazing to learn, which I had no idea, a moose will straddle a red maple sapling that might be 14 feet tall, you know, that 2-inch size where they're really growing fast and getting tall.
Yeah.
It'll straddle it and push it over with its chest and browse all the way up it and walk over it, and it'll whip back up.
I could see that.
So, yeah, they got the muscle to do it. The browse line is about 12 to 14 feet.
No kidding. We don't have moose. Once in a while, we get a crazy bull that comes south into Catskills and Mid-Hudson Valley. Very rare. But so our deer numbers are still declining despite moose, but I thought that'd be cool to mention. I noticed when I was in Vermont in the Green Mountains briefly, very rarely saw deer. Saw moose. Mm-hmm. So it does seem like wherever moose and deer overlap, the moose kind of went out. But I don't know. That's why we're going to have a moose person on.
We'll ask that,
because I got no clue about moose. Be kind of cool to have moose.
It would.
You know?
Just to see. I mean, they're huge animals. Huge.
They're weird animals. They're basically like a forest camel with antlers on it.
Yeah, I could see that.
No? You got a weird mouth, man.
Yeah, long snoot.
They resemble a camel. Yeah, seriously, their mouth's very similar. So strange animal. So predation has increased in Minnesota. They have wolves, as we said before. Probably at mountain lions in some places. I think they're somewhere around there, but who knows? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Wolf predation is up 25% since 2018 in Minnesota. In Catskills, winter mortality from lack of wintering yards is probably less of a factor, but it could be still a factor. Ample stands of hemlock, Norway spruce. We do have large Norway spruce stands that were planted during the Civilian Conservation Corps of the Great Depression, and some that were planted in 1960s and 70s and whatnot. But up next, we'll talk a little bit more about this and why deer numbers are low or continue to be low in the Northeast on From the Forest. And I don't know. If we get done with that, we'll maybe do some recap 2021. We'll see. Showdown, Electric Light Orchestra. And this is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talking about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is why deer numbers in the Northeast remain low. I'll reiterate this one more time, but deer numbers, especially in aging forest, are declining throughout most of the Northeast. However, ironically, browse impacts in those areas are increasing. So, less food to eat for the deer. They keep up with what grows, and there's a browse issue, which is really weird. So don't take it from just me. I guess it was this guy, Mark White, and he did a study for the Nature Conservancy there. called The Impact of Deer Browsing on Minnesota Forests. And like I just said, despite fewer deer, there remains impacts in Minnesota's North Shore area. And the studies demonstrating deer browse included fenced-in areas versus unfenced. And it's a little different over there because they have different species that are more palatable than others. Like, for example, they don't browse balsam, I guess, there.
Really?
Which is weird because they deer here.
It's candy here.
Browse the hell out of it.
Yeah.
But any case, the regeneration in unprotected areas with no fence included white spruce and balsam fir. Norway spruce here is what seems to regenerate because it's prickly and deer don't eat it. Balsam fir here definitely gets browsed. Unprotected areas also had half as much biomass. Unprotected areas also lacked tree saplings, and the growth was towards grasses and sedges. I would say here, instead of grasses and sedges, it would be like, well, still grass would be what it would be, ferns. I don't know. What else?
Maybe another prickly shrub like barberry or rose.
Yeah, definitely. Stuff like that. The unprotected area was more open. The unprotected area was more simplified, as he says, and that greatly impacts songbirds when there's no structure. The fenced-in areas had more saplings of desirable regeneration, and over there they're trying to get white cedar to grow, northern white cedar. White pine as well. I guess they browse white pine. Isn't that weird? They don't browse white pine as much here.
I was gonna say,
they do, but not as much.
We can regenerate white pine okay.
Isn't that strange as hell? Deer have different preferences in different areas. Because think about it. I've seen them, they'll browse the hell out of balsam fir here. They'll leave white pine alone.
Mm-hmm.
And over there, they're leaving balsam fir alone and eating white pine. What's going on?
You got me on that one.
I know. That's what I said when I read this. It's like, what the heck's going on? And, you know, here, now we're starting to see deer even start to browse Norway spruce, which is pretty bad.
That's the worst.
Right? Yeah.
It's the most prickly needle and most unpalatable out there, right?
Yeah. Also, aspen, I guess they eat a lot. Paper birch and black ash, which we don't really have black. We don't have black ash. Black ash grows more north, St. Lawrence Valley, stuff like that.
Well, aspen, I mean, that's browsed on here heavily.
Definitely. Yeah. Ash is not as much. In here, I would say it's medium to low preference. Mm-hmm. They will browse it in some areas where they're dumpster diving. But, yeah, white ash is weedy in the Catskills, really.
Yeah.
You know? So, there's a lot of areas in the Catskills that maybe not going to white spruce, but they are going towards a lot of Norway spruce regeneration. Some areas have white pine. Black birch, I would say.
Black birch.
Forest preserve, black birch.
There better be some commercial use, major commercial use of black birch in the next 50 years, because guess what? We have a lot of it coming.
Yeah, I think you're right. In the forest preserve of the most mature forest, black birch is growing like a carpet in some areas, especially under stands that have dying hemlock.
Oh, I was going to say, hemlock that's either been cut or it's dying from hemlock woolly adelgid.
Yeah, it's too bad, man. This stinks. Hemlock dying. There's an area where I go camp along a stream. Beautiful big hemlock. They're all dying. Just carpets of black birch growing in.
Mm-hmm. And deer don't even browse them when they're young. Like a lot of these species they don't really like, they'll still browse them when they're young, tender shoots growing off in the springtime. Black birch, not really. A little
bit. Weird? It's weird because it tastes like wintergreen.
Yeah.
Tastes good to humans, that one.
Mm-hmm.
And yet these guys don't eat them. But they'll eat beech first. What the heck's going on?
Beech and rose. They'll browse on multiflora rose, which is very prickly.
When it's young, they definitely will even more.
Mm-hmm.
Where I live in central Ulster County, it's hard to grow a multiflora rose. The ones that are already there are fine. That stuff doesn't even really grow where I live because they browse it. I mean, I'll see it along my fence. And what will happen is it'll be hiding behind the fence, and if I don't string trim it, it'll get going then because they can't reach it. But If it's young and outside the fence, they'll just keep nabbing it back usually.
I've found spots that I pay attention to in Delaware County that new shoots that have never been there before are 4 feet, 5 feet tall from last summer's growth, and that spot's going to be taken over.
Yeah.
So deer are still in that. They got good enough browse where they're not quite into it yet, right?
Definitely. So what to do? As Mark White from the Nature Conservancy recommends, more forest management, deer reduction, etc. I would say the habitat has got to be addressed first. Could be the introduction of more predators, as some people think. However, I think habitat really does trump that. And, you know, humans are also the biggest predator. I mean, this should be studied more. And I remember reading about it with Native Americans and stuff that they would find the estimates of what Native Americans predated is probably really high and was way more than any mountain lions or wolves could do. Would it make a difference? Yeah, probably. I just think the habitat was way more important than deer numbers through the burning that was done, the amount of nut and fruit trees, especially nut trees and stuff, mm-hmm. that are created by fire over time. As we learned last week with mesification, if you don't manage your forest or burn or cut, it eventually goes towards shade-tolerant trees like maple, which don't provide mast, meaning fruit and berries for deer mm-hmm. and other animals. So you end up getting less of them. But I don't know. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's a complex issue because deer numbers can fluctuate yearly or at least cyclically in a five-year period, where forests, we're looking at 50 to 100-year cycles, right?
Yeah.
So this is a bigger picture. You really got to, if you're going to go either route, habitat route, deer reduction, whichever, both preferably, it's got to be a long-term solution. It can't just be like, well, for now we're going to reduce deer numbers. And no, for later on we're going to do habitat work. And
right.
It's got to be a hand-in-hand thing that you're all in and yeah. for a long time, for multi-generation. And that might be where we struggle first, is yeah. deciding on what to do.
Yeah, we'll see. I guess. I don't know. Well, I'm all done with this topic. I think we're done with deer. What else? You got anything else to say about deer?
That's the biggest thing. You're deered out, huh? Season's over.
I feel like we pushed too much deer in the last few weeks, but I had to do one more.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
You know? I'm looking forward to tonight's dinner.
Deer?
Yeah. Some steak.
I had deer last night.
What'd you make?
Actually, we did a thing. We tried something. We aged tenderloins 18 days. This deer was shot on...
Holy cow, man.
On November, or December 10th.
Yeah.
Yep. We had them last night for dinner. Excellent.
Really?
I mean, if they were... You thought they were tender before.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the you know, hanger steak, filet mignon you're paying buco bucks for in the store.
How are you cooking it?
Just seared it, seared it in the pan, cast iron, rare. Just a sprinkle of big game rub seasoning, but not enough to change, you know, not to overpower, just enough to give it a little taste.
That's what I like. Oh. I just like in a cast iron pan. And what I've learned is high heat for me, getting the pan hot first mm-hmm. and searing all sides and then counting time after that.
Yeah.
And it's like the best. But I think what I used to do was I would sear one side, and if you didn't sear the other side, it's bleeding out. It's losing flavor mm-hmm. and moisture.
You got to sear it to seal it, right?
Yeah. You got to seal that stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's where we struggle with this bear that I got. It's like you got to cook it to 160, right, for trichinosis reasons.
And yeah.
Trying to figure out how to cook this thing. It's delicious every time, but keeping it to not get tough. It's that fine line. It's so hard to work around.
Yeah.
So that's an educational thing. If anybody's got ideas, let me know.
Yeah. Well, 2021 is over, just about. And is there anything noteworthy in the forest that you can remember? Or is it just like, eh?
Well, Hemlock Oleodelgid made a big jump. We had a few shows about that. You know, it got into interior Delaware County where we hadn't seen it before, right?
Yeah. It's a bummer.
It sucks.
Yeah, and Greene County. Seemed like we're in Greene County quite a bit looking at infected or dying hemlock trees. And I don't get in Greene County too often.
No. Nope.
Although this year I did. We did a lot in Greene County. Yep. So.
I don't know. What other big things happen in the forest? I would say it's mostly status quo, right?
Yeah, EHD nothing crazy.
Was an issue. That was a spike. That was a new thing for some of Ulster County.
Yep, EHD. Seemed like more people out in the woods hiking. Probably a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
Getting sunlight, you know, get your vitamin D.
Yep.
Although in the woods there's less of it, but some. But exercise is good. For me, it was a good maple sugaring season back in February, March. I can't stress enough, if you're doing backyard sugaring, to tap trees with the biggest crowns. Save a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Unless you have one of those fancy-dancy reverse osmosis things. But even then, you know.
Still, time's worth something.
Yeah.
So that says, are you going to tap soon? I mean,
it's not nothing in the forecast. Not really.
Well, there's a cold spell coming, but after that, it's looking... I mean, this week looks great, but obviously it's a little early now.
Yeah. I don't look to tap until at least January 1st. I mean, that's kind of a rule. You got to draw the line somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's warming up, but it didn't look that great. It looked like it was mid-30s.
After this week, there's going to be a few nights that are quite cold.
Yeah. And they don't really run that well in the beginning. I don't know. You need a solid week of 40s in January.
Hmm.
Although, I mean, it's not like it's been that warm. It's like, really hasn't been much of a winter yet, but it's early. It's early yet. We said that last year, and then after this time, it was cold. Wintery.
Yeah, it got cold. And...
yeah, it was a real winter.
Yep.
So, no, I had one of my best years maple sugaring, and I give credit to the trees on that one. They just wouldn't stop. I think it was site-related. I really do. Because for whatever reason. I don't know how it's going to be this year. No idea. As far as hunting was terrible. I mean, I put a lot of time in. I got some deer, but geez, I didn't really work for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I was big buck hunting either. It was just deer hunting. Yeah. But I know it was noteworthy. The amount of food in the forest this year was ridiculous.
True, true.
Holy cow.
Yeah, acorns, the ones that were around, started dropping at like August 15th early.
Yeah.
There was a few, but then cherries.
Fruits.
The cherry trees were incredible in September.
Ton of fruit.
Where there was beech nuts, the beech trees were incredible. I mean, the mast.
Hickory.
The bear sign in the woods was amazing.
The hickories were... We're coming out this year as well, shagbarks. I picked some shagbarks for the first time in years. Mm. Made some shagbark hickory nut butter, which is pretty cool.
Amazing.
I loved it.
Apples.
Apples.
Pretty much anywhere.
Pears were even more than apples. My pear trees were crazy.
Hmm.
You know? I really stressed out one. I didn't want to thin the fruit. I wanted it to weigh its branch down, but it was like a fine line between, like, is this branch going to crack? Because if you can get them to bend down a little bit, I think that's good for them.
You think they'll stay like that?
Yeah, I do. And they produce more fruiting buds if you do that.
Mm.
You ever notice on pear trees, the ones that kind of bend down, they're loaded with the big fat buds.
Yep.
I think, anyway. Grapes are nuts. Well, grapes are grapes, not nuts. And let's see. Everything. Black haw, whatever you want to call them, those viburnum ones.
Yep. Yep. Wild raisin.
Mulberries were good. I don't know about the blueberries. I wasn't in the woods in the summer on the mountain. I don't think the blueberries were that good. Do you know about that?
I remember eating some, but I didn't pick any, so that probably means it wasn't that great.
Yeah. Now, it was a good year. There was a lot of stuff out there for the animals to eat. In fact, I think there was so much food, a lot of our members, Catskill Forest Association, were complaining about birds not visiting their bird feeders.
Well, that says a lot. When the natural food source is greater than, you know, oily bird seed.
Yeah.
That says a lot.
The ticks were bad in the spring. Then they kind of went away for whatever reason in the summer. And I picked one 2 days ago.
Yeah, they
I picked one off me 2 days ago.
Kind of peaked back up in the end of November, early December. I haven't seen any in a couple weeks, though.
I go through for a walk. And this son of a gun is on my pant leg. And you can tell... It's cold. I mean, it wasn't that warm out. And he's, like, kind of moving, like, because you could tell he's cold.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't really feeling it. But he was there. It looked like a young adult or a nymph. I'm not sure. but
there was a couple spots this fall. One of them was Andy's. It was awful. I kid you not. We took the dog on a hunt one day. She's a bird dog, so we take her hunting. Set her on the tailgate when we were done. I picked over 100 ticks. Stopped counting.
That's crazy.
Just
wow.
It was, her face was moving with this tick mass.
Do you do the front line or no?
Yeah, she gets treated.
Well, what the hell?
Well, they don't kill them right away.
How many of those do you think come in the house?
There's no doubt. It happens. No, we're good about it, people aren't.
I've been saying it for years, man. I think people are more, it's the dogs bringing them in.
The Lyme disease thing.
Dogs and cats.
It definitely is a factor, no doubt.
Yeah, because where does a dog like to go?
They go on the couch, on the bed.
But I mean outside. They're always in the shrubs.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're in places you're going to pick them up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've had people say, no, frontline kills them right away. I'm like, how could it kill it right away? I mean, how toxic is this stuff? How could it kill it right away?
It's right? Not right away.
Yeah. How long do you think it takes to kill? I have no idea. I don't have a duck. I have chickens.
You have chickens. There's two things. So I don't give our dog frontline, so I'm not as familiar with that. It's the other thing. It's an adjustable. So the tick has to bite the dog before it kills the tick.
Oh, really?
So it does have an opportunity to jump off, right?
Okay. Well, that's not good.
That's a factor. But as soon as it bites it, it's like instant.
Instant death.
Like we've been outside, just went outside, and there's a fresh dead tick on her. Like, holy cow.
Wow.
I think just bit her and died.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It builds up in their fatty tissue and their skin, I guess.
Jesus.
So, yeah, I don't know.
All right. But, well, we only got about 30 seconds left. I'm from the forest in 2021. We've been on since 2010. This is show 541 plus, it's probably more than that, but that I have recorded when I think I messed up a few numbers in there. About 541 shows, so.
Wow, who's
counting? We're looking forward to next year, and that's all I got.
All right, well, that's how we're going to end 2021 then.
All right, see you next year.
Good night.
Good night.
God, I hate music.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, did appear. Upon his mantle shining the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest.
WIOX is supported by the generosity of our listeners and the following underwriters. Qualterry's Nursery and Garden Center on Route 30 in Roxbury, open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Christmas trees, live and cut. wreaths, roping, and large and small kissing balls, holiday centerpieces, and plants. Qualtieri's Nursery and Garden Center. Smiles required. Early orders accepted. 607.